Good morning. It is 9 minutes past 7 o'clock. My name is Susie Jones, along with Josh Wheeler, and this is our Health Hour Head to Toe. We do it every Sunday morning from 7 to 8, talking about a number of different health topics that affect our lives. And we're going to talk this morning, this hour, about a new study, a recent study released earlier this week, saying the health of U.S. children has deteriorated after over the past 17 years, with kids today more likely to have obesity, chronic diseases, and mental health problems like depression. We're grateful to have on the air Dr. Chase Shutak with Children's Hospital to talk about the study and what he sees every day in his practice. Good morning, Doctor. Thanks for coming on today.
Good morning, Susie. Thanks for having me on.
So you took a look at the study, obviously. It's your business to keep up. What were your impressions? Is it stuff we already know, or was there something surprising?
Mostly this is stuff that we already knew, which is a little depressing. But some of the findings were particularly striking, just to have it really written out. In particular, you know, kind of the difference between rates of death by firearms between the U.S. and other high-income nations was astonishingly higher. It was like 15 times higher.
Really? 15 times higher in the United States of children dying from firearms than in other, what did you call the state? How did you characterize the country?
Other high-income nations.
High-income nations, yeah. I mean, and that one jumps out at you more, you think, than obesity and chronic illness, I suppose, because it's death. It's not like just a chronic condition. It's the end of their little lives.
Yeah. If it's okay, I can break down the study for a moment.
Sure, do that.
The study really has two different analyses within it. And both of the analyses say things about what's going on with the health of U.S. children, but they are rather different. The first analysis is looking at the U.S. versus 18 other high-income nations. And that analysis is looking at mortality over time. And the conclusions there, I think, are pretty inarguable because, like you said, you know, death is final, there's no subjectivity to that. The other aspect of the analysis is looking at kind of health trends within children only in the U.S. over time. And that looked at a wide variety of data, both medical records within 10 different states and 5 different kind of nationally representative surveys. That data is also distressing, but it's also a lot less clear than the mortality data, because that everything they're measuring, not everything, but a lot of the things they were measuring there, there's some subjectivity to it. And so the exact nature of what we're measuring might be changing over time. The awareness might be changing over time. And certainly, like, some of our tendency to diagnose has changed over time there.
You are listening to our Health Hour Head to Toe. Dr. Chase Shutak is with Children's Hospital, and we're talking about a new study, talking about the health of our children in this country. And if you're listening and you have a question or a comment, feel free to jump in. This is an opportunity for people to be involved as well. 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. So how is this data used? Like, for someone like you, is this something you read and say, oh, we already know this? Or do you read and say, let's think about a way to combat this, you know what I mean, as a jumping off point?
So this sort of data is very good at describing things that are going on. It's not particularly good at telling you what's causing it or how to solve it. For kind of the pediatrician in the clinic, this is most useful to think about how can I make sure that I'm available to meet the needs of my patients and what is increasing over time. And this study really suggested that you know, the problems that are increasing within children in the U.S. are largely, you know, kind of mental health, and then, you know, some physical health aspects like obesity. And so I would just want to make sure that, am I an expert in that area? Do I know who to refer to, you know, and learn more if I needed to on how to manage that?
But for things like kids getting chronic diseases like diabetes, that's got to be like, how does a child who is obese and gets diabetes treated differently than an adult? Is it complicated when they go through something like that?
That, yes, that is fairly complicated. And usually within pediatrics, if a child develops diabetes, because it's much less common, we involve our specialists. We involve our endocrinologists, who are specialists in hormones and growth and diabetes.
Okay. And because it seems to me that there could be some differences physiologically between a child having an adult's disease and an adult having an adult disease.
Oh, yes. One of the basic truths of pediatrics is that children are not little adults. And so you can't just apply the same solutions or methods that you do for an adult with a disease to a child with a disease.
Very good. We're going to take our first break of the hour. It is 7:15 on News Talk 830 WCCO. I'm Susie Jones along with Josh Wheeler. Our guest is Dr. Chase Shutek with Children's Hospital, and we're talking about a new study released that finds that over the past 7 years, kids today are more likely to have obesity, chronic disease, and mental health problems like depression. And we want you to be a part of the show. Maybe you were struggling. Maybe you're a grandparent and you have a grandchild that's overweight, and kind of how do you address it in your family? 651-461-9226. Should grandma say something or keep her mouth shut? 651-461-9226. We'll be back right after this. And we are back. It is 20 minutes now past 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning, a very smoky Sunday morning. I came in today and Channel 4 has their weather colors kind of an orange. I think that means it is smoky. We can ask Dr. Shutek about that as well. Dr. Chase Shutek with Children's Hospital with us, and we're talking about children and health and what a new study says. So I want to ask you about the smoke, if you don't mind sort of throwing that out there. Do little kids, little lungs, are they more susceptible or prone to feeling worse during this bad smoky weather?
They are more prone to feeling worse from smoke or kind of air pollution, especially the youngest children, you know, so infants, that first year of life, particularly sensitive to air quality. And so they fall within, you know, kind of that sensitive group that they talk about when they say, hey, you know, it's too smoggy outside for sensitive groups. That includes very young children. Their lungs are just much smaller.
Yeah, and they can't take those small particles into the outlying areas of their lungs. I went for a walk last night, doctor, and I was like, I'm gonna go home. It would smell like burnt tires. I felt like it's really gross, that air pollution.
Yes, within my family, we frustratingly have been having to pay a lot of attention to the air quality index, the AQI. And because, you know, we were in the red zone for most of yesterday, it was a little bit of a difficult weekend day as we had to confine our children into the house and really attempt to manage them when they desperately wanted to go outside.
And again, the kids, because their lungs are smaller, just the size of their lungs is what kind of makes that different.
Yes, that's part of it. As well, it's also just kind of their different metabolic needs and also how they are still kind of growing and developing.
Mm-hmm. And do kids have the same kind of an effect, like the headache, the itchy eyes, the sneezing from the bad air?
Yes. Yeah, they can definitely have that. Something that the most common thing we think of within pediatrics really is an asthma exacerbation. So, you know, any kid with asthma has a much higher chance of setting off their asthma with the air pollution. Any kid who has a tendency towards something like asthma is more likely to have an episode like that. And the air pollution also just increases the chance of getting viruses and colds in addition to all the other irritation.
Yeah, it was not fun. And I think we have a day or so more of it. So we have to continue to face it.
When I woke up this morning and I saw that the air quality was actually worse this morning than yesterday, I was not pleased.
I love my windows open. It's my favorite thing when it's kind of in the 80s and the humidity's low and you just want that fresh air. And I was like, who is burning? I mean, like, who would have a fire on, you know what I mean? And then I didn't realize it was Canada. Canada's having a massive wildfire. Well, let's reset this a little bit for folks if you're just tuning in this morning. Dr. Chase Shutek is with us with Children's Hospital. We're talking about children's health this morning. You can reach out if you would like, 651-461-9226. And a new study out kind of showing what we already know about the propensity for obesity and other problems, particularly, as the doctor said earlier, about mental health and depression. But I just saw the story, I think I mentioned to you, the CDC now out, according to AP, finds 1 in 3 young people have pre-diabetes. Can you respond to that?
Yeah, the kind of increasing prevalence of obesity and the associated kind of health conditions, you know, so pre-diabetes, sometimes a liver injury called metabolic associated steatohepatic liver disease, or MASLD. It's a very easy thing to say. You know, high cholesterol, all of that has been steadily increasing over the past several decades, which is quite distressing as we think of those as adult diseases. And having adult diseases work their way into the pediatric realm is concerning, just because, you know, they have so much life to live, and managing a chronic disease, you know, over the span of an entire, you know, 70, 80, 90 year lifespan, is much more difficult, and it's just much more likely that there will be complications.
And when you're talking about pre-diabetes, what are the markers of pre-diabetes?
So with pre-diabetes, usually families can't really tell without doing some sort of blood test. There's a common physical sign of kind of the darkening of the back of the neck. And the kind of medical term for that is acanthosis nigricans.
Wow.
And it is very common for families to come in concerned about that.
Like the skin, actually, let me interrupt, the darkening of the back of the neck?
Yeah, so the common spots for it are the skin on the back of the neck, or the skin kind of in the underarms, and that's actually from increased kind of insulin production. So insulin, right, helps us control our blood sugar, but it also encourages growth to a certain extent. And so in those fold areas, it encourages the skin to kind of thicken and darken a little bit. And that's a sign that your body is really making a lot of insulin. It's really trying to keep up with the amount of blood sugar you have.
Mm.
Almost always when a family comes in with that, you know, their blood sugar is still normal when I take a look at it, you know, in the moment or over time. The kind of over time measurement is called a hemoglobin A1C. But you will also often see that in that pre-diabetic realm. You're not quite high enough to be diabetes, but you're in between.
And can you turn it around?
Yeah, it is still very unlikely for a pediatric patient to develop type 2 diabetes. you can usually prevent that. It's very rare for type 2 diabetes to develop in the first 19 years of life. The problem, of course, right, is that, well, you know, once they leave my clinic and, you know, you're 25, developing type 2 diabetes at 25, 28 is still much worse than developing it at, you know, 45 or 50.
Mm. And you say, I mean, once they're out in the world, they're on their own, so they're not under the supervision of a doctor. Generally, they don't have to if they don't want to. No one's taking them to a doctor unless they're sick or something. So it can kind of, get worse, for lack of a better word, once they're out of their parents' home?
Yes. It's the transition to, you know, kind of adult life is fraught and often, you know, most physicians I know from, you know, 21 to 25 just stop seeing doctors as well. It's very common that once you make that transition, suddenly you kind of act like nothing can ever go wrong with you, and so you stop seeing your physician.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, to be fair, I understand why they're having that feeling. It's a very busy period of time. That's usually when we are actually in the best state of health of our lives.
In theory.
In theory. But, you know, as this study suggested, that may not be the case as much anymore.
Again, you are listening to our Health Hour Head to Toe, and our guest this week is Dr. Chase Schutek with Children's Hospital, a pediatrician, and we're talking about children's health and a new study that found kids today are more likely to have obesity, chronic disease, and mental health issues like depression. And we invite you to be part of the show as well, 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. Call if you would like to jump in. Love to have you. We'll take our bottom of the hour break here on WCCO and bring you the very latest on the weather after this. Okay, I was wrong. I was wrong. I'm admitting it. 66 in Minneapolis right now. So I have a little sweater on. I don't know about you, but I do. Josh Wheeler at the helm, our guest this hour, Dr. Chase Schutek with Children's Hospital, and we're talking about children's health, and we're inviting you to be part of the program, as always, 651-461-9226. I have a couple of text questions for you here. We'll start with this one, Doctor. Have there been any studies about children playing competitive sports, and in that including extensive travel, like maybe the stress on a child's life? Do you look at that kind of thing?
Right. So the biggest thing that we found as we've been studying it has been the kind of like specialization of sport.
Mm.
So, you know, nowadays kids often, right, they become, okay, I'm going to be the best hockey player in the world. I'm going to be the next Wayne Gretzky. And so they do hockey all year round, and, you know, they're part of multiple travel teams. And that actually generally is physically quite bad for them. You really should always have an off season where at a minimum you're playing a different game, a different sport, so that you're not overusing or overextending yourself. I do think, you know, the questioner's point of, oh, is this putting too much pressure on the child? Yes, I agree. I think that is true.
Mm.
It is, while, you know, when we are young, all of us dream about being a sports star, and that there's just only so many sports stars in existence.
Yes, exactly.
And so leaning too much into that dream, you know, I think can be a little bit of a setup for disappointment.
Exactly. 651-461-9226. If you have a question, we're talking to Dr. Chase Schutek, Children's Minnesota, about children and health and all things related. This person wonders about This person talked about sugar, removing sugar as much as possible, and to replace it with other kinds of sweeteners. What do you make of that in terms of now for adults and for children?
So I do think that controlling the amount of sugar and the amount of processed food is very important. You know, right, there's from The Omnivore's Dilemma, you know, the book by Michael Pollan, he summarizes, you know, eat food, real food, mostly plants. And I think that that's really the best recommendation you can get in terms of, you know, your food choices and nutrition and diet. You know, eat real food, mostly plants.
And what I was going to jump in, what about, you know, maple sugar, or stevia, or some of those, and can they affect your blood sugar?
So those actually can. Your body responds to those sugar alternatives in many ways like they really are sugar, which, right, is extremely disappointing because the entire reason you're using it is because you're like, hey, I want to avoid the sugar. But that's not helping you. Ultimately, I would say, you know, if you're not okay with eating that in its natural sugar form, then you shouldn't be okay with eating it in its, you know, alternative form either.
Okay, good to know. I'm a big stevia person, so that's not great for your body.
No.
It's not? Like, is there a good, is there monk's fruit or some other way to sweeten something?
You know, so natural sugar itself is, I prefer natural sugar to any of the other processed options. You know, so if it's like a stevia, like a pure replacement, or, you know, in like pop, the high fructose corn syrup, It's the whole issue that there does seem to be something with ultra high processed foods that are while they are delicious, right? Mm-hmm. There's a reason they're extremely popular. All of these ultra, you know, a Twinkie, like, yeah, who doesn't love a Twinkie? But it's really, it's not good. So as much as possible, the closest to the natural food you can be is often usually better. That being said, everything in moderation, right?
You know, oh, that everything in moderation. That's my least favorite sentence. No. Oh, 651-461-9226. Can you talk a little more? A texter wanted to talk a little bit more about why kids are 15%. Actually, it's more than that, I think. The gun violence, the gun firearms, you said it was...
Oh, yeah.
15 times. Yeah.
Why their rates of death are 15 times higher than the other high-income nations that we compared it to?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is a very good question that I think has many, many factors to it. My summary hypothesis is that we, in the United States, we have an unhealthy relationship with firearms. The rate difference is just extraordinarily high, and the fact that we're talking about death is extremely concerning. Firearms actually managed to go past car accidents as the number one cause of death for children aged 1 to 19 in the United States. And we are really alone as a country in having that issue. There are multiple factors going in, most of them well outside of my area of expertise. But my summary would be, I think we have an unhealthy relationship in this country with firearms. If you are a parent and you own a firearm, I implore you, have a gun safe. Keep the weapon and the ammunition in separate locked areas.
And have you seen in these in the problem with guns differences in different communities, where rural or urban? Has anyone actually looked at that? And in if it's an urban area, is it more likely to be different communities? Or you know what I'm saying? Is it worse in different parts of our population?
It is something of a universal issue, especially because it is more commonly used for really kind of like self-harm or accidents than, you know, kind of homicide. So you definitely see that self-harm or that accident in, you know, kind of like rural and urban areas. In terms of, you know, kind of homicide or the kind of like bad malicious intent, you're going to see that just more in dense areas where there's just more people. And so that I think of as a little more of like an urban area finding, but it's, again, like those are actually are like the minority.
Mm-hmm.
It's more so kind of self-harm or accident.
Okay. We're going to move on. 651-461-9226. We're getting other text questions, so I want to make sure we get to those as much as we can. A texter wonders, what are good resources and where to go for behavioral consultants, if you wanted to offer that up for kids?
So their behavioral health is an increasing problem and difficulty, and resources are not as robust as we would like. That's one of the things that kind of the healthcare systems are trying to work through, is we just don't have enough child psychologists and child therapists. Generally, you know, kind of, I always recommend checking out, you know, kind of the CDC, MDH, you know, kind of like trusted large health institutions. So definitely go to Children's Minnesota's website, but all the other, you know, kind of local, regional health systems also have good resources. There's also on Children's, their website, there's the Symptom Checker. I believe I'm saying the name correctly. Mm-hmm. And which will kind of help direct you towards kind of first line, how do I think through kind of managing these behaviors?
Mm. All right, so we'll direct them there. How about this one? Are frozen dinners and meals considered processed foods, or are they healthier to eat?
It depends on the frozen dinner. Frozen foods can be great because they can be cheap and effective and very easy to heat up. And there's nothing wrong with food being frozen and stored as frozen itself. That doesn't change it at all. But some of the frozen dinners are, if you look at the back of the box, it's a lot more ingredients than just, you know, the peas and the chicken or what have you.
Right, right. And you see that sodium level, like 400%.
Yeah.
A lot of sugar. I mean, a lot of salt in those, right? Or sodium.
Yeah, right. Because it's, you know, it is one of the things of, while there's nothing wrong with freezing food, sometimes it can affect the taste. And so in order to overcome that, they may just salt it excessively.
Sure. Let's get one more in before we take our last break. And this is something I think so many people struggle with, and it's so delicate. I have a granddaughter that is very overweight. Is there anything I can do to help her? It's a very delicate topic. You know what I mean? You get a lot of pushback, a lot of defensiveness. So how do you find a way to approach that gently?
Right there, it is very difficult to have that discussion, and you definitely don't want to cause any bad feelings or shame, certainly not in your granddaughter. I would recommend, you know, when you're with your granddaughter, definitely model good behaviors, you know, kind of do activities together, go for walks in the woods, get outside into nature. You know, when you're eating together, make sure that kind of, hey, you know, like you're having nice whole foods, good variety of foods, you know, not excessive, not too many treats or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When talking with, you know, your child, you know, so your granddaughter's parents, there you've just got to have a very light touch. And I wouldn't recommend coming in hot and heavy, because everyone's situation is different, and you know, how much weight is too much weight is a very individual thing.
Yeah. All right, 651-461-9226. It is 7:47 on a Sunday morning. Jump in if you have a question for the doctor, and we'll take a break here and come back with as many questions. Try to answer as many questions as we can after this. And we are back with the last segment of our health show, Head to Toe. I'm Susie Jones. We're happy to have you with us. Josh Wheeler is at the helm. Dr. Chase Shatek is with Children's Minnesota, and we're talking about children and health, and we've invited your calls and texts, 651-461-9226. This person writes, how bad is diet soda? I drink a lot.
I would not recommend it.
How about that moderation question? How many can you have in moderation?
You know, maybe like one a week. You know,
one a week.
It's a treat.
Holy cow!
It's a candy bar. It's multiple candy bars.
What about a diet one? What about a diet one?
Then it's multiple candy bars full of replacement sugars. It's just not good.
Oh, it's so hard to kick that habit. It's the worst. I love Diet Coke. It's my favorite. Another texter wrote a little bit ago about red dye. Is it possible for dye in food like red dye to cause nightmares or sleeplessness? Have you ever heard of that?
I have not seen a study kind of causing that sort of association.
Yeah, what does red dye? Red dye is bad, though. Everybody's taking it out of things.
Yeah, right. So they are moving to try to get rid of red dye. I believe, I'm not entirely positive what the negative associations were. I feel like maybe it was like it's a mild carcinogen, as many things are. But yeah, it's not. I understand that it's not fantastic. I also feel like this is probably not the highest priority thing in our life.
Right. Getting to the next question, 651-461-9226. Texter writes, good morning. Thank you for the program. What influence do the many video games have on gun violence and gun use, or the bad relationship with firearms? And also, are children diagnosed with ADHD more likely to be involved in that? I guess I don't know how much has gun use and gun violence been studied.
Right. So some aspects of gun use and gun violence have been understudied, actually due to prohibitions that they've had regarding funding for gun violence and gun studies. And that is due to policy decisions at a national level. So we can't be entirely the experts that we want to be in regards to that. I will say the studies they've done on video games and violence actually suggest that it's not a big cause.
Hmm.
Certainly I would encourage, you know, be considerate in terms of the types of games that you're having your kids play or your grandkids play. It does not seem like it is a huge factor in affecting their behaviors.
Okay.
There is there is some association, right, between differences in kind of like how brains work, you know, so developmental delays and ADHD even to some extent, and kind of like violent behaviors. I will say, you know, this does open up the question of like media use and
that's a
how
whole...
much is technology and media.
We need another hour for that.
Yes.
But before we run out of time, maybe you can get this one quickly. In your estimation, is it all right for children and at what age to lift weights, or is that a bad idea? And we have about 30 seconds.
It is okay for children to lift weights in moderation, especially once they are a teenager. Before,
okay.
Earlier than that, limit it.
Okay. Hey, thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate it, your wisdom and your insight. Appreciate it. And if anyone has questions, is it Children's, what's the website for the hospital?
Children'sMN.org.
Wonderful.
Children's Minnesota.
Okay, have a great day.
Thank you, you too.
All right, Dr. Chase Schutek from Children's on News Talk 830 WCCO.